Hey there, friends. My name is John Whitaker, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Bible in Life podcast. My aim, my goal is really just to teach through the text of Scripture, try to do so in a way that's connected to real life, or in some way helps you know Jesus more and follow Jesus more fully in the midst of your everyday life. I like to call it blue jeans theology. And so, welcome. Grateful that you are here. On this episode, we are continuing just some simple kind of down-to-earth reflections out of the book of Colossians. And I want to continue that here on this episode. But before I do, I want to make mention that if you are a follower of my other podcast, The Listener's Commentary, that teaches straight through books of the Bible. So there is detailed teaching through the book of Colossians or Ephesians. In fact, I have 22 of the New Testament books complete. The 22nd one will be done in just a couple of months. It's the book of Matthew, and all that will be left will be the Gospel of John, Letters of John, Book of Revelation. And we'll have the whole New Testament done. And so I teach straight to those books, detailed teaching through the books of the New Testament, Listener's Commentary. So if you're not a follower, you can check it out. If you are a follower, I wanted to let you know that I now have an app available for that, at least for Apple products, iOS only at this point. Currently in talks with an Android developer that I think might be able to replicate the project for Android, and so we can cover all devices. And so check that out on the App Store. Just search for The Listener's Commentary if you use an iPhone or an iPad, and you can listen to the commentary right there. Much more easy to use because it's organized by Bible book. You can click the library icon, and you can have just the most recent episodes just as it is in your podcast feed. Or while you're there under all books, you can actually click the three little lines to the right in the upper right corner, and you can change the default settings there instead of most recent, so it's organized by book as well. And so it just makes it so much more convenient to use. You can search within that app. And so if you want to find all the passages that talk about, say, being justified or justification, you can just put in justified and those passages will come up. You can then add justification. Those passages will come up. And then you could listen to my teaching through those texts as well. And so just makes it so much easier to use. Find things you can download to listen offline. So that's the app for The Listener's Commentary. If you are wanting to dig in and study some of those New Testament books in detail, highly recommend the app to you as a useful way of doing that. All right, let's jump in to Colossians chapter 1, picking up in verse 15. And so we have offered some reflections on the first part. We're not going to go through the whole letter like this. We're going to pick just some excerpts. But this next little section is so incredibly rich that we just need to spend a little time reflecting on Colossians 1, 15 through 20. And before we look at the details of that text, let me ask you a question. When you imagine Jesus, when you picture Jesus, what do you see? How do you imagine Jesus? If you're like me, my imaginations of Jesus stem from the scenes of Jesus' earthly life in the Gospels. So I see Jesus with his disciples. Maybe it's an evening around the fire and they're debriefing the day's teaching. It's Jesus sitting in a boat on the Sea of Galilee teaching the multitudes. It's Jesus walking the hills of Galilee on his way to Jerusalem for Passover, Jesus in the temple debating with the religious leaders there in Jerusalem. That's the scenes I picture. It's a very human Jesus. He's wearing his, at least as I picture it, the traditional robe of a Jewish teacher and a Jewish rabbi from the first century. And he speaks with the kind of authority in my mind. He speaks English, but I know he really doesn't. He probably spoke Aramaic to his disciples, and he interacts with them in traditional and typical sort of Jewish rabbinic ways. And that's the pictures of Jesus in my mind. I'm guessing the pictures of Jesus in your mind are probably pretty similar. They look like this picture of Jesus we read about in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, very human, very down to earth, very present, picture of Jesus, the Jesus who confronts the religious leaders while at the same time welcomes tax collectors and sinners. Those are the pictures in my mind. Well, when we come to Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 and following, the Apostle Paul paints a very different picture. It's not that the other pictures are wrong and this picture is right. It's that it's the same picture, but we have to have both of them together. And so what the Apostle Paul paints by way of painting a picture about Jesus here in Colossians chapter 1 is a picture of Jesus in all his glory. It's a picture of Jesus in all his authority. It's a picture of Jesus exalted to the right hand of the Father, right? Jesus' favorite self-description in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, is Son of Man. And that's how he referred to himself. And that derives from this picture in Daniel chapter 7, where Daniel sees one like a Son of Man, meaning he looked human, and yet he sits on the throne next to God the Father in all his glory. And God gives him rulership and kingship over all the nations of the world and all the kingdoms of the world. And so he's this exalted, reigning Son of Man King in Daniel chapter 7. And when Jesus refers to himself as Son of Man, he has sort of that picture in mind. And so both these pictures, the exalted king over all the universe picture and the down-to-earth human personal picture that we see in the Gospels, we have to hold both of those together. And so we see the exalted picture here in Colossians chapter 1, picking up in verse 15. Now, before I look at the details, let me just note for you, again, you can listen to all the exegetical details on this passage on the listener's commentary on Colossians chapter 1. But let me just note for you how the structure of this section works. So Colossians 1, 15 through 20 has two distinct chunks. Chunk number one is picturing Jesus as ruler over all creation. Chunk number two, picking up in verse 18, is Jesus as a ruler over his people, the church. So you have both of those chunks placed here. Both emphasize his preeminence and his authority and his supremacy and his greatness. And we'll reflect a little bit on that as we go. So let's jump into the details of Colossians chapter 1, picking up in verse 15, it says this about Jesus. He, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Couple things to just think about. He is the image of the invisible God. And so when you're reading those stories about Jesus in the Gospels, when you're reading with him at Simon the Pharisee's house and the sinful woman comes in, weeps all over his feet, wipes them with her hair, and Jesus challenges Simon and affirms this woman. When that happens, you're seeing the image of the invisible God. When you see Jesus challenge in debate and dialogue fashion the scribes and the Pharisees in the temple in Jerusalem, you're seeing the image of the invisible God. When you see Jesus conversing and dialoguing and explaining things to his disciples, you're seeing the image of the invisible God. When you're seeing him act with compassion towards a woman who has just lost her son, her only son, you're seeing the image of the invisible God. I think that's so important for us to think about. In fact, when I was a fairly young Christian, one of the ways I decided to try to read the Gospels was, what does this teach me about God? And so I would read the stories about Jesus and say, what does this teach me about who God is and what God is like? He, Jesus, is the image, the visible image of the invisible God. When you see Jesus, you see who God is and what God is like. So important for us to pay attention to. He's the image of the invisible God. So much more we could say about that, but let's just move on. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. One of the things we need to recognize is this word firstborn. It's going to be used twice in this ode to Jesus, if you will. And the first here, he's the firstborn of all of creation, which has the sense of over. He's the firstborn over all of creation. And so even though he came in the flesh, He is the Son of Man who is given the kingship over all of creation. And he's that by virtue of his exaltation. But Paul is going to go on here and say he's also that by virtue of the fact that he created everything. And we have to hear that. He created everything. So when it says firstborn of all of creation, what we don't want to read there is that he is the first created thing. That's a mistake. It ignores what Paul actually says. It ignores what the rest of the New Testament teaches. Firstborn was a way of a word that could be used as a title for the heir to the throne, the one who's on the throne. Well, that's who Jesus is. He is the one who's going to sit at the right hand of God the Father as ruler over all of creation. And that's the force of this phrase, firstborn. That's who Jesus is. So he's the image of the invisible God. And at the same time, he is the authority over, the ruler over, the king over all of creation. And then Paul goes on and explains why he could be entrusted with that in verse 16. He says, for by him, by Jesus, all things, not most things, not some things, not a lot of things, all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth. So the things in heaven, the spiritual beings in heaven, whatever else was created in the heavens, heavens being God's space, heavens being the sky, heavens being the outer space, as we would call it in our language today, right? So the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, the galaxies, as well as the spiritual beings that inhabit God's space. So everything, all the things in heaven and the heavens were created by him, as well as all the things on earth, everything, every little thing, every big thing, the mountains, the valleys, the rocks, the hills, the rivers, the trees, the birds, the cows, the elk, the deer, the little tiny bugs and the fish in the seas, all of it was created by him. That speaks to his glory. That speaks to his preeminence. That speaks to his power. That speaks to his creative genius. And when I look at creation, that's one of the things that always strikes me is that Jesus is a creative genius. The genius to even architect and engineer and dream up all this stuff. And then the genius to be so artistic about it all and to make it all beautiful and incredible and so much variety. Creative genius. That's who Jesus is. So he is the creator of all things in the heavens and on earth. He is the creator of what Paul says here, things visible and invisible, things we can't see. And I wonder what Paul all had in mind when he said that, but maybe even some of the forces of physics in our world, right? He created those sorts of things, the spiritual beings that are invisible, the visible things, everything. And then Paul lists off just titles for rulers and authorities, both of the spiritual kind as well as the human kind, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, like anything that has any so-called power or authority or rulership, whether it's spiritual beings or whether it's human beings who are in charge, Jesus is the maker and creator of all those things. And so Paul emphasizes all things have been created through him and for him. Don't miss those two prepositions, through and for. All things have been created through him. He is the means by which all these things were made. He is also the goal for which they were made. They were made for him, for his honor, for his purposes, for his agenda, right? For the things he wants done. We human beings, we were created for him, for his purposes, to carry out his ambitions and his goals. So all things, everything, all the universes, all the galaxies, all the animals, all the people, it's all created for him. And so Paul says in verse 17, he is before all things. That means he's preeminent above all things. Not just that he is before in time, he's before in rank. He's before in supremacy. He's before in superiority. He's before in authority. He's before, ahead of all things. And Paul says, in him, all things hold together. Like the entire universe holds together by his power in him. Were it not for him, everything would break apart at the seams. He holds all things together. Well, that's the first chunk of this little ode to Jesus, where it's praising him for his authority and rulership and creative genius and power over all of creation. The second part focuses on his headship in the church. And so verse 18 says, he is also the head of the body, the church. So he's the head of all creation. He is the ruler of all creation, but he's also the head of the body, the church, his people. And so he's in charge over that. He is first place in that. He has the highest rank in that. He's the king over his church, his assembly, his people. That's what the word church means. It means assembly, a gathered group of people. And so he goes on and says, he's the beginning. What is the beginning of what? Well, this is where we get our second firstborn. We have to think clearly about this. He's the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. In other words, he is the first human being to rise from the dead, promising that there will be more to rise from the dead, the first one to rise from the dead and never die again in a glorified, resurrected kind of state that we will, those of us in him, will enjoy for all eternity. We will be like his resurrected self. And so he's the beginning of this new humanity, this resurrected humanity, and we're experiencing now phase one of our resurrection in him, and there will be more resurrection to come. How do we know that? It's not just a wish. It's not just a guess. It's not just some sort of, I sure hope it's true. We know it because Jesus is the firstborn from the dead. And so as our king, we will be like him. And so Paul says the goal of that, the aim of that, is that he himself will come to have first place in everything. First place in creation and first place in the new humanity, first place in every single thing. And while that's not totally recognized now and totally seen now, it is the reality now. And those of us who know him know that's true. And so we look unto him and try to imitate him in this world because we recognize he is the universal ruler. He is the supreme king over everything. Now we could keep going on and reading. We're running short of time here, but let me just read it real quick. He says, for it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him. A specific phrase that has something to do with the background in Colossians, but all the fullness we learn is all the fullness of God. Colossians chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. All the fullness of God. It's like you don't have to go looking for more of God. If you have Jesus, you have everything about who God is and what God is about and what God is like and what God is doing. You have all the fullness of God in Jesus. It dwells in him and through him to reconcile all things to himself. That's the goal, is to eventually put all of creation and all of the universe back to proper working order under him, to reconcile all things to himself, whether things on earth or things in the heavens, having made peace through the blood of his cross. And so what we see is that the hub, the centerpiece, the glue, everything in all creation, it all is anchored in and revolves around Jesus himself. And so when you picture Jesus and you imagine Jesus, yes, imagine the very human Jesus walking the hills of Galilee or walking the shores of the Sea of Galilee or standing in the temple in Jerusalem. Picture that. But as you picture that, also remember who this one is, that he is just as much alive today as he was then, and that he is that close, that intimate, that personal Jesus there in Israel in the first century, but he's also the firstborn over all creation. He's also the king over his people, the church. He is the ruler of all things. And one little observation or reflection that reminds me is this, is that at least in my country, and I think in lots of parts of the world, we tend to believe that some form of democracy is the best form of government. But if you're a follower of Jesus, what we need to come to terms with is that for Jesus, the best form of government is monarchy, is a king, and we will have a king ruling over us forever and ever. And he's a good king. He's a wise king. He's a powerful king. He's a benevolent king, but he's still a king, and he's still in charge, and he still is full of glory and full of power. He's the kind of person who could speak and worlds came into existence. He's the kind of person who can impart life to non-living things. He is that kind of person. And so while he is good and loving and kind and benevolent, he still is full of glory and power. And he's our king. And that's who will rule the universe and rule over us forever and ever and ever. And so as we read this little hymn in praise of Jesus here in Colossians 1, I hope it expands our sense of Jesus' glory and greatness. Causes us to maybe stand a bit more in wonder and awe at who he is and to appreciate him more fully and more deeply, as well as to submit to him more completely, because he is the one that's in charge of every single thing, both on earth and in the skies and in the universe and in heaven itself. So to him be the glory, both now and forever. Amen. Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of the Bible and Life podcast. And thanks to those of you who make this ministry possible by your generous donations and support. I pray you have a wonderful week in Jesus. I pray that you continue to grow in your love for and admiration for him. May God bless you. I look forward to talking with you again next week.